Hey folks, welcome into the On to Waveland podcast here at The Athletic. I am Brett Taylor, joined by Sahadev Sharma. Patrick Mooney is on game duty, as we are. Our regular Thursday recording schedule would normally not at all be like a game-related conflict, but the Pittsburgh Pirates are having their home opener today at an exceedingly odd time, particularly for folks in the central time zone. And they happen to be hosting the Cubs, which means that we're recording in the early afternoon and the Cubs are going to kick off in about 25 minutes. So it'll be an interesting pod that we will do our best to ensure that it will be interesting to you regardless of the outcome of today's game, which you may or may not be in the middle of watching by the time you're listening to this, or you just watched it and you can't believe that after those first six games, the Cubs just notched 27 hits in a single game. Can you believe it, Sahadev? Wow.
You're taking the over, Brett? You're taking the over on, yeah, said, on what are we going with, 3.5?
Yeah, I said it was funny for the for the series finale against the Brewers. And I mean, obviously, everybody knows that the big talking point coming out of that series, and of course the series that preceded it against the Pirates to open the season, is it's not just that the Cubs offense is performing quite poorly at the moment through six games, you know, all appropriate caveats. It's that sort of specifically, they're just not getting hits. And, you know, for as much as we talk about all of the peripheral statistics and all of the things that go into offense, not making outs as the fundamental aspect, sometimes you are reminded that, oh yeah, hits, baseball. It's like you're supposed to get hits. And when a team is just fundamentally not getting hits at all, it especially in an era where we're already seeing, obviously, the tremendous creep of strikeouts, walks, and home runs, if there's just like no hits, boy, that really stretches out. And it is like, what are they doing? This is really painful to watch.
Yeah, I mean, just some of the numbers are kind of, I don't know if painful or laughable, depending on your mood.
Will the Cubs team batting average exceed pitchers batting average in baseball by the end of today's game? That's the big question, because right now they're behind by about 20 points. They are trailing, the Cubs as a team are trailing pitchers in batting average by about 20 points, and that's excluding Ohtani. He counts as a DH for that conversation.
Oh, geez. And that's, I mean, they have the same amount of hits as the Nationals, fewer hits than the Mets. And keep in mind, both those teams had their first series of the season wiped out, and the Nationals have played 2 7-inning games. So, I mean, it's just silly things like that. It's just over the top and kind of embarrassing. And I know it's six games, but these are issues we've been talking about for months now that carried over from last year. I'm not saying that, you know, give up all hope and the offense is what it is and there's no chance of them getting better. I'm just saying there's if you're concerned about the offense and think it's a major issue going forward, who can really argue with you on that? How can you make a legitimate argument other than just saying it's early, be patient? Sure, but we have a lot of evidence that this offense struggles. And the fact that I think we can't dismiss what happened last year, right, as far as the mental aspect of 2020, how hard it may have been for guys that six games in saying, oh, no, we're through 10% of the season, I got to get my numbers up, right? So that mental aspect isn't impacting them this year, hopefully. So they should be able to kind of find their rhythm. Just looking back at what day is today? Thursday, Wednesday's game. When you talk about, I appreciated Jock Peterson's post game press conference and kind of what he said to us. What I loved the most was kind of his analysis of why he's struggled early on.
And you wrote an excellent piece on that, by the way, at theathletic.com. in the Cubs section, so folks will want to check that out, but please proceed.
Yeah, I mean, I was interested, and he gave such a good answer, I was kind of impressed, because I basically asked him, you know, why, can you pinpoint why you had a great spring and why it hasn't really carried over? you know, sometimes that feels like it can feel like a dumb question, right? Like spring doesn't matter. None of that stuff should matter. I'm working on a bunch of different things. And then you come to the real games and it's tougher pitchers. So it's expected, right? But he gave a pretty thoughtful and really, I thought, interesting answer in the fact that he was working on changes in the spring and they worked out well, right? We saw what, like a 1800 OPS, 1400 OPS, something crazy, right? And he was doing great, but he never struggled. He never had to make adjustments. He never had to say, okay, I'm doing these new things. How do I adjust? I know how I adjust the old way when I used to struggle in with my previous approach. Now I have a slightly altered approach. How do I adjust? And it took him a few games. I thought, just watching him, I shared that gif in my piece about that awkward swing on the fastball. I'm not sure if you saw him, Brett, but I saw it in the previous games too. I was wondering, like, what is wrong with this guy? It's one of those things that
he looked very late.
Clubhouse access,
very late on fastballs.
Very late on fastballs, like he was guessing wrong and just trying to quickly adjust and foul it off, right? Like, I got a battle here, and uh-oh, it's a fastball. I was not expecting fastball and awkward swing right through heat down the middle often. It's one of those things that, you know, if we had clubhouse access, you would have just, like, quickly touched base with them. You know, don't want to overreact. It's a few games in, but you know, what's going on with the fastballs there? It seems like he had some defensive swings. You're still trying to find your timing. And I'm sure, given what he said over Zoom, he would have given us a solid answer. But I think some stuff like that is fair to say, okay, this guy needed to adjust and needed to learn how he adjusts with his new approach. And he maybe found his timing. Let's see if Jock Peterson can get on a hot stretch. I think there, it's fair to kind of look at, hey, Ian Happ's made some solid contact and the ball hasn't fallen a ton. But then you look at other guys and it's like, what is going on? I don't know what's going on with Anthony Rizzo. I've watched Anthony Rizzo a lot and I've seen him, you know, go through tough stretches. But for some reason, this one feels different or looks different to me. Maybe I'm putting my own thoughts into his play as far as maybe pressing for a contract or just trying to get off to a good start for so this team isn't broken up come July. All those different things. I start to wonder what's going on, but I don't want to put those thoughts in his head when he hasn't come out and said that. But it does. He looks off to me. That's one of the guys that I'm kind of surprised by, and it looks like more of the same from Javi too, which has to be frustrating for fans.
Yeah, I think what's been observable with respect to Rizzo, I mean, he isn't making good contact right now, and you would look at normally six games, 15 to 20 plate appearances, and you wouldn't really think much of it, but he's expressing visually a level of frustration that you wouldn't expect from him in that brief of a period of struggles. So that's kind of what stands out. It's less about the results or how he looks, even if you could look at it and say, ah, he looks not quite right. It's that I think at least twice now we've seen him really get aggravated visually, slamming his helmet, upset with an umpire, just sort of in ways that you might see from him in the deep depths of one of his slumps, which we've seen from him many times, and he comes out of it. But so that's certainly why it stands out. With Javi, I mean, I think that the issues that we're seeing look very familiar, and that's concerning. Just sort of very fundamentally extending his zone so dramatically. And, I don't know how that's part of his game. And you're not going to completely eliminate it for him, particularly in his late 20s. And he's had success and you kind of just want to let him do his thing. But that approach failed him so badly last year. And we want to believe in the explanations for the 2020 season, but what this year is going to provide, particularly in the first half, is a lot of opportunities for people to either accept those narratives or dismiss them. And it might be completely unfair because of, you know, we know the nature of baseball being erratic. But the reality is, if Javi has serious contact problems in the first half, serious issues going way out of the zone. People are going to look at that 2020 season a lot differently, I think. And that for him is probably very concerning too, because he's had, you know, he's in a walk year, and, you know, we've talked about this before, and I'm not going to make this a whole big extension thing. I just want to make the point that Jed Hoyer made a point to say quite a bit before the season began, the walk year idea, and the idea that it can, at the margins, and we've looked at the data, there's a little data to support it, that at the margins, you know, a guy's work perhaps in the off season in the year before the walk year can improve his performance at the margins. The flip side of that is some guys, and we've seen this too, when they get the comfort and the security of knowing that they don't have to fear what's going to come next for their security, maybe play a little more comfortably and don't feel that pressure and don't feel pressed. And, you know, I'm not going to be the one to start up that storyline with respect to Javi, but I'm smart enough to know that that's going to become a talking point. And I don't know. You wonder how this situation that the Cubs have foisted upon a lot of these players and the construction of this team, you just wonder how it's going to impact different guys differently, particularly when they do get off to a slow start, and particularly when they do have in the back of their head, I had a really bad 2020, but I convinced myself it was just about the lack of video and the lack of fans and the lack of time to adjust and all those things. What if it wasn't? What if I'm actually losing it? It's just, you know, I hope that instead it's just six games. It's just six games. It's just six games. I hope that message lands quite a bit more firmly right now and then get some good bounces here and there. And then that kind of puts it all to bed.
Yeah. I 100% agreed there that the players, you have to hope. Someone was kind of annoyed with me that I was using last year's numbers to kind of carry over the struggles for this year. And ultimately, their point was, which I agree with, and I completely disagree with the idea that I'm not allowed to use those numbers, because when they're similar issues, it kind of paints a picture, right? But ultimately, his point was, well, the players can't use those numbers for last year. They have to focus on this year. I 100% agree with that. I don't want any player, you know, regardless of team, regardless of who you are, don't overthink things and start thinking about last year's numbers and last year's struggles. Focus on the fact that it's six games. Focus on the fact that you have 162 games to play this year. You want them to be focused on the fact that this is a marathon once again. This is normal baseball. We go through ups and downs. Nobody would be paying attention to these six games if it was the middle of June, right? And I thought Jock Peterson said that great as well. You know, nobody would care. He's like, I wouldn't care if it was June and I was hitting 280 and had 25 homers, right? I wouldn't care about this slump, because it would be like, okay, oh, I'll God. Get back.
If he had 25 homers by June, you're darn right I wouldn't care.
Yeah,
I'd be pumped. I'd start counting down the record books.
So there's, I mean, and he admitted he was putting pressure on himself. He's like, I'm in a new town. I all these fans have expectations for me. I want to perform for them, and I haven't been. So there's pressure. So I'm putting pressure on myself. And he said there's pressure on everybody. We all have pressure, and he's right. I appreciate that he can admit that and not say like, oh, nobody's worried. Nobody has pressure on them. This is easy. This is baseball. Well, we all know it's 162. You're going to put pressure on yourself at times. It's about trying to kind of balance that and figure out how you do need to remind yourself that, yes, it's 162. Okay, I'm putting a little bit too much pressure on myself. Let's ease back here. Maybe getting away from Wrigley is what they need. Maybe just facing the Pirates pitching staff again is what they need. I know they didn't feast off them early, obviously, but you know, a second go around against a team that's supposed to be the worst in baseball, and I don't think they've you know, dissuaded anyone on that with their performance of late, especially against the Reds. The Reds look like world beaters on offense facing that Pirates team. So let's see if the Cubs can get rolling again, rolling for once, I guess.
Yeah, and then obviously it's a lose-lose situation for them potentially in terms of the way people talk about the team, because if they turn it around and they rake this weekend. It's like, ah, well, it's just the Pirates. It doesn't mean anything. And of course, if they don't, oh my Lord, then the continued tracking of the Cubs results relative to the rest of baseball and to the pitchers of baseball will continue. And of course, I participate in that because what else are you going to do right now? You have to have a little bit of dark fun with it.
I was about to say, like, I'd much rather they be this type of bad for our purposes than like middle of the road offense. It's like, they're just kind of bad. Like, let's get some extreme stuff going on here so we can joke about how they have 21 hits and they have eight singles, Brett.
Eight singles through six games.
Yeah.
They had the stretch where, and I think this is okay. What was Chris Davis? So he had the sort of record hitless streak, right? Was it about 53 at bats? Does that sound right to you? Something like that.
I thought it went to like 60 something, but
okay, maybe it got into the 60s.
Something else, but
and the Cubs, of course, did not. They weren't quite that bad, but they did have a stretch at one point where they were up to, I believe, 1 for 51 as a team. And when you start thinking about how difficult it would be if you tried to go 1 for 51 with only, it's not like they struck out half of the time. Elevated, sure. But I think they only are striking out, what, like 28% of the time? I mean,
it's not crazy. I mean,
yeah,
it's not bad, good, but it's, yeah.
So, yeah, to go 1 for 51, it takes a really unique combination of really poor contact and really bad luck. And so that's kind of where it is. And we'll see some natural regression, but certainly they're going to have to make better contact. Let's leave that there because we've hit the general points of that discussion, and I think we both agree that it hasn't been good, but it's been six games, and you can't take away too much from six games.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep. You heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, so transitioning. I want to take away too much from six games because the pitching has been fantastic. So, I mean, they're locked in. The Cubs clearly figured out a way to create a cheap, dominant rotation. They're doing it again with the bullpen. And I mean, it's going to be like this the rest of the way, right?
Well, you know, I think it's hard to deny that they clearly have figured stuff out at the major league level when it comes to maximizing their pitching. This happens year after year after year. People complain about the bullpen, but look at how it stabilizes relatively quickly. Last year, I think it got off to an awful start, and by September, they were one of the best bullpens in baseball. 2019, I know outside of Kimbrel, they settled down, and the bullpen was actually pretty solid. It happens year after year, really, with this team. They sometimes have a, you know, a mishmash of arms there, but they kind of somehow put it together, and it goes from either like weakness to strength or really bad piece to not so bad. And rarely do they have these superstars in there. I think they actually have a nice combo of like upside guys that we don't really know about and some pretty solid names that they're getting back to their peak form. I would also like caution a lot of these guys are up and down, right? We're seeing bad Jason Adam right now. He could very easily lock it in and be dominant. We're seeing really great dominant Andrew Chafin right now. Just be careful. I know Cubs fans love him right now. This guy's going to drive you nuts. At some point, he will drive Cubs fans nuts.
Only if he shakes. Yeah.
But I've heard it from Diamondbacks fans before. He's going to lose it a little bit and not be locked in with the stuff, and the walks and the lack of command is going to infuriate you for a stretch. But he's a very like, this is what he is when he's locked in, a dominant setup man from the left side, which is nice to see. Obviously, there are questions, like, you know, Brandon Workman now, it's like been up down. I don't know what that means. Was it just one bad pitch really to Kane, or what was it? But yeah, the pitching's been really good. I mean, Alzolay, people were complaining about Alzolay after one inning. I thought he really locked it in after that home run, right?
Yeah, it wasn't even, he looked great. It wasn't even the whole inning. It was like he gave up the home run and then he nastily struck out the next two batters.
Yeah, and I mean that's someone with upside there that could be around for a while. You really want to keep an eye on him and see how he progresses. That has meaning much beyond 2021, in my opinion, for him. So yeah, I'm not surprised that the pitching is good. It has a, I feel like they have a floor that is decently high. I don't know what the ceiling is, just because, you know, you don't have that true swing and miss ace at the front of the rotation that I think you need to be a dominant team. You know, like a really great team needs one of those, needs a Yu Darvish at the front of their rotation, right? Obviously that's not the case this year with the Cubs, but they have, I think all these guys are very solid to above average, you know. So let's see how good Alzolay can be, but the rest of them I think are very good pitchers. I don't think there's so you can point to a pitcher and say, like, that guy's just not good and he's going to give you four innings of bad baseball and it's going to screw up your bullpen. Yeah, every once in a while that's going to happen, and you know, to any of these guys, like we saw with Hendricks on opening day. But for the most part, I like this group a lot, and think it's pitching and defense looks to be shaping up to be the strength once again. If you can just get average offense, that works out well. Usually if you have a terrible offense, not so well.
Yeah, it. I mean, I guess that's how you end up 3-3 against, you know, in the games that you've played, despite looking so egregiously bad offensively, still managed to win three games. I mean, could be a lot worse in that respect. It'll be interesting to see going forward, giving all the pitching success, where we know that the Cubs have a lot of really interesting, good depth options that they're going to want to get into the, you know, they're going to want to get some starts for Shelby Miller at some point. Pedro Strop was actually looking pretty darn good in spring training, and so you kind of maybe want to have him back. But right now, it's like, how are you making that happen? And so it'll be interesting to see creatively how the Cubs spread that around, because you're going to have to do it anyway for innings purposes. So,
and Dylan Maples wasn't terrible. Am I remembering that right? Was he was good. In his outing,
it was fascinating. He was clearly getting stretched out in spring training for multi-inning purposes, which I understand a lot of people would think that's very strange because he strikes you as a very traditional one-inning type. But here's the thing. Without options, but with killer stuff, the Cubs wanted to keep Dylan Maples, okay? So in a world where you're like, okay, we want to keep him just in case it really finally clicks with this new delivery, but we also don't want to expose him too much. So how about we turn him into a two-inning guy, and he's our sort of mop-up long reliever type? And I tweeted when Alzolay gave up that three-run homer in the first. I was like, well, I think we're going to see a couple innings from Maples today. And a lot of people were like, what are you talking about? And I guess maybe it had been obvious to me, but it wasn't obvious to everyone yet, that that's the role he's going to fill for a while. He's going to be sort of the, we got to cover some innings, get him up. Because it will give you a safe environment in which to evaluate him and see how he's doing, maybe a little less stress on him while he works through this new delivery. And so I think it's great. It's logical. And he looked really good in his two innings of work. I mean, he walked a couple because that's what he does, but he also struck out four. So
if I'm remembering correctly, those weren't like the egregious Dylan Maples has completely lost it walks, right?
No,
like
no.
I think maybe a couple of the pitches were like competitive.
Competitive walks, basically. Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, you'll take that. You'll take that from him. It's a nice little mini step, and you hope there aren't the normal step backs that we inevitably, I feel like we've seen with him throughout his career, where it's like, oh, that was a nice inning. Step forward for Maples. And then the next outing, it's like six walks, and he can't get anyone out, and you're losing your mind.
Okay. So, should we, okay, let's maybe a couple emails, kind of.
Yeah, let's do that.
Move to that. I got to say, really appreciate it, folks. We didn't know how this was going to go. When you put out the call for emails, there's nothing worse than when you're like, oh yeah, all these people are just waiting to email us, and then it's total crickets in your inbox. So we really appreciate it. And we want to give the love by reading these and also just encouraging other folks that if you have comments, questions, feedback, whatever, that you want to come directly to us and maybe appear on the pod, you're going to send those to wavelandathletic@gmail.com. For example, Alex, who sent us an email and very astutely referred to our third host, Patrick Mooney, as Gallagher, if you were listening last week. So the emails to, hey, Brett Sahadev and Gallagher. Alex from Indianapolis here. Love the show. Brett, been a longtime BN reader. Thanks for all you do, and thanks for all the hard work. I can't think of a team with higher variance than this Cubs team. It seems like everyone on the roster, with a few exceptions, is just as likely to have an all-star season as they are to have a replacement-level season. What are some of the early signs, either for individuals or the offense slash pitching as a whole, that you will look for as an indication that things are trending positively? So we'll go a little forward-looking on that, as opposed to like what we've already seen. And, you know, I'll take an easy one and say, like, with a guy like Chris Bryant, where you have tremendous variance in the possible outcomes, where you have like MVP level literal upside versus kind of what we saw last year, didn't play through some injuries. And it's just, so honestly, it's mostly health for him. If he stays healthy, I really feel like he's going to produce, and I really feel like he's going to produce at a very high level. But while you could say that about a lot of players, with him, the injuries just see, what's the way to say it? Not that they impact him more. It's that we've just seen him so frequently playing through long-term injuries, and we can see what the deleterious outcome is. So that's what I'm mostly looking for him, is that not just on the field. I'm not saying, when I say healthy, I don't mean just able to play. I mean like fully feeling great and good to go. And that's when I think you're going to see all-star level Chris Bryant.
Yeah, and you know, we kind of talked about Javi, but just watch for him. He's going to chase. He's going to strike out a lot, but watch for him going the other way.
I got to interrupt you, Sadif, because I'm going to do another email real quick because it's about Javi, so then you can just make the same point and sort of synergize them together. Okay?
Perfect.
So this is Sean, and Sean writes, hey, guys, obligatory, by the way. I'm not making fun of Sean or Alex, but it's just a, I don't know if other fans of other teams do this. You have to tell people how long you've been a fan. It's like, it's a required part of the introduction. You know, hey, been a fan for this amount of time. And fortunately for Sean, he too has been a Cubs fan for 30 plus years. So he has met the criteria. If it was like 20 years, I'd be like, Sean, I'm questioning your commitment. If you've only been with this team for 20 years. Hey guys, I've been a Cubs fan for 30 plus years. Love your work on the podcast. My question piggybacks off your Javi Baez talk on the last podcast. I understand that on base is an important stat, but I don't think it tells you the whole thing about a hitter. I remember going back to Starlin Castro and how they were working with Starlin Castro to go deeper into counts, and that just wasn't who he was as a hitter. He is for decent average, and the OBP is never going to be elite. A little more about Castro. Comparing could be that Baez is a similar hitter with more power. I personally think trying to get Starlin to take more pitches and be patient ruined him and messed up his head. That is, of course, my opinion. Just curious your thoughts as it relates to Javi Baez. Thanks, Sean.
Yeah,
so go with that how you will.
Sure. Well, I mean, okay. First of all, what do we need to see for Javi to be kind of locked in? Is going the other way, hitting for power, line drives into the gaps, especially into right center. Once you start seeing that, you start to see him kind of locked in on offense, right? And we've seen already what he can do on the base paths. We know what he can do defensively. I think too, was it Sean? It was Sean's point. Well, first of all, here's the thing. He's an elite defender. So he just needs to be average on offense to be really, really valuable. And that's, you know, that's what he kind of is for most of his career. Is kind of like an average to slightly below average offensive player who is can play all over the field, really, but is an elite defender at shortstop. Do we overvalue on base percentage? Yeah, you can focus on that too much for certain players. I agree that sometimes you just need to let players be who they are. I think I have this right. Adam Jones, if you look at his peripherals when he was at his best, they're the type of peripherals that you say, like, this guy, what you know, I'm concerned about him. This isn't going to last type thing. And he put up what, like a peak of like 6, 7, 8 years. That was really good, like all-star level. I think he may have been like a borderline just below MVP level for a couple years there. But there are certain players where you just stop obsessing about those things. Either they have something about them that makes them dangerous in different ways, or it's just not a part of their game and they can still be valuable. I'm not saying that on-base percentage isn't an important statistic. It is one of the most important statistics and tells us a lot about an offense. I think it correlates closely with you know, runs scored and just a good offense in general. But that doesn't mean you want cookie cutter players. You can't expect all players to be the same. This is kind of what Joe Maddon said with Javi early on, and kind of Ross. I believe Ross kind of echoes it. You just let certain players be who they are and let their natural talents play. And I think you can allow that for Javi. And I think you have a point with Starlin Castro. Maybe they got a little too cute with it. You can say that for Jason Hayward when they first signed him. They tried to make him something that he's not. Get that ball out in front and elevate the ball, right? You can do that and then change the contact point. No, that's not how his swing works. That's not how he works. He works, let the ball get in deep in the zone and take it the other way, and he'll thrive. So there are certain, I think you, the ultimate point is, don't just assume you can make everyone into the same type of hitter. And you certainly don't want, I think the Cubs are a perfect example of, you certainly don't want the same type of hitter up and down the lineup, right? Unless it's a bunch of like Manny Ramirez's or something like that, you know, or I guess you could say Anthony Rizzo when he's really locked in. Yeah, sure, you'd love everybody to be like that, but everyone has their own strengths. Let Javi be Javi. At some point, yes, Javi needs to be better than what he's been. I mean, I know he's never going to be an on-base guy, right? And that doesn't mean he's not going to be good. So just let him play to his strengths, and I think you'll be happy with the results.
So to that end, and tying it to what Alex's original question too. So like Sahadev said, want to see Javi going the other way with authority. Want to see him, frankly, making more contact. He's going to offer outside the zone. It's just something he does.
If I could quickly say, he was talking about, the first email was talking about variance with the team, and I agree.
And like,
this team has a ton of variance.
Yeah,
this team has a ton of variance, but I think it comes back to my point of their ceiling is ultimately limited because of that lack of ace. I love everything about their ceiling when we talk about how good can they be. I love everything about them except for that missing ace, which puts a kind of a, like, for me, that puts a cap. You can't reach the Dodgers or maybe the Yankees, or I'm probably missing a great team off the top of my head, but you know, those elite teams that we all know are the best of the best. They have all those little pieces all throughout their team. The Cubs are missing that one. They have everything else if those guys play up to their potential, but also that their floor is, it could be pretty ugly too, I think.
Fair enough. And good questions. Thank you, Alex. And oh no, I spaced on, you know, I'm gonna find Sean. It while I'm filling. Yeah, Sean. I was like, I'm filling space while I click and be like, oh, yeah, Sean. So thank you guys very much for the emails. And to all others, please do shoot us an email at wavelandathletic@gmail.com. We'll give it a read and we will give it our thoughts. But also make sure you're rating and reviewing us wherever you get your podcast. That helps us. And subscribe, tell your friends, all that good stuff. And we'll be back at you next week, hopefully after the Cubs bats have awakened from their off-season slumber. And this is On to Waveland. I'm Brett Taylor. He's Sahadev Sharma. You can catch my stuff at Bleacher Nation, his at The Athletic. And we'll talk to you again soon. Thanks. Take care.